Hi, this is Tish Perlman.
It's a very familiar voice for us, somebody that we hear on a weekly basis, but it is the first time since I've been with Finger Lakes Public Radio that we've had you in studio. Thank you so much for coming in today.
Oh, it's a pleasure. It's a pleasure to see the new studio, too. This is impressive.
I think one of the things that we don't do enough in public radio, and a very good friend of mine at Troy Public Radio in Alabama does this a lot, is have the personalities on the air to talk about their programs and talk about themselves, because the audience really enjoys knowing a little bit more about the people, and we get to know you a little bit through the show,
but we
don't necessarily talk a whole lot about how the show came to be, and I think that's a really good point to start. How did Out of Bounds begin?
Well, I was an interim news director at a local station in the Ithaca area, and I had always wanted to have a talk show. I did talk radio in San Francisco. I did interviews, freelance interviews, and I thought, I want to have my own show sometime. So I left the job at the station as the interim news director, and I decided to make my own little demo tape, and I had an idea of what I wanted to do. You know, kind of a Terry Gross kind of show, in that I do my research. It's not just flying off the handle kind of interviews. You do the research, you do the work, you craft the questions, you craft the idea for what you want to talk about. And so I proposed this, and I sent it to many stations, even NPR, you know, headquarters in Washington. And I got good feedback, but nobody would take it on. You know, I mean, you know how hard it is for stations to open up space for new shows and new ideas. And finally, after almost 3 years, I get a call from Mike Black here at WEOS, and he said, let's try it. Let's see, you know, let's give you 6 months and see if you like it. And so I started meeting with your people here, and we started. We discussed whether we should do promos. I mean, it was really one of those things where we were flying from the seat of our pants, not knowing exactly how to craft this and how to approach this. But it came together.
And it was unusual then, in that today a combination of things have made it a lot easier to do to have a conversation that you get out to people. You know, first it was a combination of dramatically dropping prices in putting together studios and recording setups. You know, that's something that really has happened in the 30 years that I've been in public radio. People building studios at home or buying portable equipment that is really very high quality. But the real revolution starts in 2005 when podcasting comes along and there are these alternate forms of distribution. You got in before any of that. What were the challenges there at the beginning to get the program off the ground?
Well, the original challenge, I mean, I had an idea and I knew I had skills to be able to talk to people. I wanted it to be conversational and educational. In other words, I didn't want us to veer off into every, you know, how are you? And we had 30 minutes to do a show. So getting into my technique of reading all the books and crafting two or three pages of notes and questions, I wanted to get people's bios. But the biggest challenge at first was to get people to come on the show, because oftentimes, especially in our region, people thought I was trying to present a student show. They didn't know that I was really a professional broadcaster. So it took a while to build a reputation so that, you know, now I've got books and CDs and publicists asking for their clients to be on my show. But the challenge was to probably gain credibility in some way.
I think, and that's a great point, because until you really have something that's been on the air for a little while, it's difficult for people to recognize that this really is a thing. And I guess the other issue that I would see, at least as somebody who has done more freeform programs, because it's one thing to do, for example, I host a folk music program called the Sundilla Radio Hour. Well, I know who I'm going to interview for that. I'm going to interview folk musicians.
Exactly.
Now, granted, that's still a very large tent, and I've refined it further. But when you do a program like yours, where you say authors, musicians, community leaders, doctors, lawyers, politicians, interesting people with stories to tell, how did you zero in at the beginning of even where to begin? Now you're probably inundated, but even then, if anything goes, where do you begin?
Well, you know what? I always have begun with what I'm interested in, and I'm interested in everything. And I'm a voracious reader, and I'm a voracious public media, you know, person. So I'm constantly reading magazines and newspapers. And I just started to dare to go, oh, I just read this incredible book. I'm going to see if I can get the author on. And so it cascaded from there. You know, my interest, and my being able to get people, and EOS helped me too. And at first, Greg Cotterill found out that Howard Zinn had a book coming out, and he was available for interviews. And he said, "Tish, do you want to tackle this?" Got Howard Zinn, and from there, I just thought, okay, I'm legit. I can get people like Howard Zinn. And I started getting people like Janice Ian and, you know, Pulitzer Prize winning writers like Geraldine Brooks and, you know, Dr. Helen Caldicott. And so, you know, a lot of it has to do with my interests, current events, what's happening in the culture. And I just, you know, I don't always succeed, but I have just sort of dared to venture in there and say, do you want to be on my show?
You mentioned Terry Gross and Fresh Air, and I think there's an obvious comparison there, but over the years, who were the great influences? Who were the people that you listened to that really inspired you to take on public broadcasting? Who were the people that you listened to that made you think, this is something I would like to do? I'd like to be on that side of the microphone.
You know, I started out in theater, so a lot of my influence about phrasing and learning how to speak and learning how to use your voice so that you're understood came from theater. But I think one of the reasons why I wanted to get into public radio is because of the in-depth and educational aspect of public radio, and it has continued. You know, they haven't sold out. They still go in-depth. They still are respectful. That was one thing that I found sorely missing in our public discourse, and it's gotten even worse now. But I wanted my show to be an answer to the ranting, especially right-wing radio. And not letting people speak and not letting people really show each other who they are and make it a community, you know, bring voices together in a community and let people know that we are all part of a community. So that was one of the reasons. I wanted to communicate. I wanted to educate and I wanted to inspire.
You know, you touch upon something that I think is really important right now, which is how much the public discourse has changed. I've been in public radio now since 1985. I feel like I've seen a lot of changes to public radio, but I don't believe I've seen a significant change to the core values of public radio,
exactly,
which is one of the things that's kept me in public radio all of these years. But undeniably, the larger landscape has changed, both in terms of the tone of discourse and also the number of options. The fact that, you know, the ability to build a studio and distribute digitally means more people can get their work out there, but it also means more people can put out things that have a veneer of respectability without necessarily having done the same hard work or holding themselves to the same standards.
And that's what's happening too, yeah.
And how do you feel like we then, as public broadcasters, what role do we play in counteracting that? You know, what is it that we can do to prevent that from becoming the prevailing media?
In some ways, I think it's already happening on public radio. I mean, just by the product that we continue to put out, we've refused to be sensational. I refuse to try to get publicity by doing gotcha kind of questions with guests where I could. I started out, my internship was at KPFA in Berkeley, Pacifica Radio, and I was in the news department, and it was angled to a certain flavor, and we were told do it that way, and I don't want to do that. You know, I mean, I my shows are crafted so that people can really show themselves and be comfortable doing it, you know, and I don't edit. We hardly do any editing because we go straight through, and what you hear is what you get. We edit for continuity and for time and for ums and ahs, but I go straight through and you know, it has worked out for 12 years that way, but it's intimidating to some people. But people are much more articulate and wanting to share themselves than they ever dreamed, I think.
I think something that people don't realize when you do lots and lots of interviews, when you make a practice out of listening, which is in effect what you're doing if you're doing radio well, how much that can have a strong impact on you as an individual. Mm-hmm. What has hosting this program for these years done for you and even to you? How has it changed you as a listener and as somebody who, you know, reads books and listens to music and enjoys art and attends theater and dance? How does this change your perspective?
Well, you know, because I have so many creative guests on, I think it has sort of focused in for my life how difficult it is to create something and produce something that's of quality. You know, we read somebody's book, we don't realize sometimes years, it's taken years and workshops and, you know, personal problems in people's lives, but they persevere. And so the depth and the details and just the act of creating something, I've been able to see intimately how difficult that is. So in some ways that's changed. It's made me more respectful of artists and writers and how much is put into it and how few people really get the recognition. That's another reason why I wanted to do this show. I didn't want to just have famous people on. I wanted to have people who are doing amazing things in our communities and don't get much recognition. So that changed me in a way of being more respectful of people in the arts, you know, how much they put into it.
You know, you talk about having some very high-profile guests on. What kind of gee whiz moments have you had as far as you find yourself in the room with the person talking and you do just sort of have to pinch yourself and say, I really can't believe I got this person to sit down?
Well, you know, the thing is, Kelly, most of the famous people I've had on were phoners. So I wasn't really sitting in the room with them. But I've had so many, you know, I did have Helen Caldicott come into the studio, and it was really amazing. She's quite a, you know, firecracker of a person. So she was sort of trying to bait me, and I wouldn't take it. But I was sitting there going, whoa, I'm sitting here debating with Helen Caldicott. It was really interesting. But I've been in awe of a lot of my famous guests. When I first got Janice Ian on, and that was a show that ended up on PRX and airing all over the place, different stations picked it up. She was one of my heroes from when I was a kid, you know, and I just loved her work, and it was just so exciting to have her on. It was exciting to have Howard Zinn, a legend, you know, and it was exciting to talk to John Heilman about the Sarah Palin stuff and the campaign way back when. So, you know, I mean, just all these famous people who are willing to come on. And I even asked an agent, why would Geraldine Brooks, you know, I've had people like her on, why would they want to be on a show like mine? It's you know, it doesn't carry that far. They said because so few radio shows have a serious forum for people to talk about their work with somebody who knows what they're talking about. I've had several publicists say that. So, you know, it's gratifying and it goes back to why I started this.
On the exact opposite end of that spectrum, something that you said that really resonates with me, I have opportunities to interview very famous people. I find that my greatest satisfaction these days comes in the interviews with people who are not. And especially when I'm interviewing, for example, musicians, you know, a well-known musician can cross the country and get interview after interview. Somebody who's driving themselves from gig to gig in a Subaru might not get a shot on the radio. And I really enjoy that opportunity. What moments do you have any that just kind of come to mind? It's putting you on the spot, I know, but are there any that come to mind of just somebody who you really didn't know that well when you got them into the studio and they weren't terribly well known and they hadn't had that opportunity to get in front of the microphone that really just shone for you?
I mean, there's been a lot of well-known guests that I have felt that way about. But you know, somebody who really sticks out for me is a local musician named Joe Crookston, and I'm sure a lot of people have heard of him now. He's amazing. He's a combination of Woody Guthrie and Bob Dylan. He is a fabulous writer. He's a good man. He works for his community. He should be more famous. And I've interviewed him several times, and last time I did a two-part just because, I mean, he got a grant to go on a tour of New York, and he met Holocaust victims, and he wrote songs about him. So, I mean, he's been a phenomenon for me. But, you know, I've had so many interesting interviews. The artist Peter Max was somebody who just absolutely stood out because he was so eccentric. He kept saying, I want to drive down to my studio. Can you hang on for half an hour and stuff like that? He was so engaging, too, because he's a community guy, too. I didn't know that about him, that he was interested in animal rights and so on. So people like that. I had Leslie Gore on, and she's the first guest I ever had on who said a swear word. Little Leslie Gore from Lollipops, and you know. So that was a phenomenon, too. And she was very funny, very feisty, very droll sense of humor. So, yeah, I've been surprised by a lot of people, really, really gracious. And a lot of people go, was that okay? Do you want me to do it again? You know, David Finkel, the Pulitzer Prize winning newspaper reporter who wrote a book about the Iraq War. We did this fabulous interview with him. And at the end, he said, I have to go out of town, but if you didn't like the way this turned out, when I come back, I'll do it again. You know, I've been surprised by people's graciousness and people's, you know, humanness. Everybody gets nervous. Nobody wants to sound bad. You'd think people who are famous are going to be really arrogant. I think some people probably do. Or just, you know, I've done this a million times. But people care. People care. That's what I've found.
You did have an unpleasant surprise in the past year of a substantial source of funding went away. This is always going to be the danger. Yeah. And it's always going to be the danger for the independently produced show.
Absolutely.
But you lost a grant-making organization, and grant-making organizations are sort of the lifeblood of the independent radio
Absolutely.
Program because
yeah, especially public radio.
You're never going to find, you know, I've worked in development in public radio a substantial portion of my career. One person doesn't have the time to pursue the underwriting dollars, etc. So this happened to you. What's kind of the state of things with you right now with the loss of that funding?
Well, we initially got an outpouring to keep us going for a few months, but we're going to have a big fundraiser Friday, August 11th at the Kitchen Theater in Ithaca. Musicians, food and drink. We're going to have a raffle because I have had an absolute outpouring of past guests, artists, photographers, musicians, writers who want to donate autographed books, autographed paintings, all kind of businesses are donating. So we're having this huge raffle. We've got Janice Ian sending some stuff. You know, it's going to be a huge event, and we're hoping to keep the project going through this big fundraiser that's planned.
Putting fundraising aside for the program itself, looking to the future, you know, you're podcasting.
Yes.
And I hope that's been bringing you a new audience as well. You know, I'll ask you point blank, do you ever get tired of doing this?
You know, I have thought I was burning out off and on, and then I book somebody who I've been wanting to book, and I read a book or a memoir that I go, oh, I've got to get in touch with this person. Elizabeth Alexander was one of them, her memoir about her husband dying at the age of 50. She was one of my favorite poets. And I just decided to reach out, and she came on the show a few months ago. So that re-energizes me, the fact that there's still so many people wanting to be on, and I will never run out of ideas because this whole region is just filled with creative people and, you know, forward-thinking people out there working in communities and working in the culture. So I get re-energized every time I start thinking, oh, I don't know if I want to do this anymore. It's too much work doing it by myself, you know. And then I just go, whoa, I just booked so-and-so, and here I am again.
How do you like being on that side of the interview?
I don't mind. I don't mind. It's fun to get, you know, I've had a lot of guests say, can I interview you? I've had so many people say they want to hear more about me. And I've had a lot of listeners come up to me during certain interviews saying, I wish you hadn't let that guy talk so much. I'd like to hear what you thought about that. But of course, this show is not about me. But of course, a lot of people do want to get to know me since I'm coming to their home every week. And they think they know me. And they'd like to get to know more about me. So I understand that. Yeah.
Tish, thank you so much for coming in, spending some time with us outside of your usual broadcast hours.
Thank you so much. This has been fun. This really has been fun.